This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And world events, they unfold in real time. Now you can trade them. With Interactive Brokers prediction markets, trade election, climate, and economic outcomes alongside with your stocks, options, and bonds, all on one integrated platform. These are simple yes or no contracts priced to reflect the market's view of probability. If your prediction is right, well, you'll earn $1 per contract. And you'll earn interest on your position while you're invested. IBKR prediction markets turn market expectations into actionable trades. Prediction contracts are not suitable for all investors. Learn more at ibkr.com/predictions.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
A deeper dive into technical analysis. Prices are probing important levels. We're on the edge of our seats, waiting for more earnings results. And our guest today is the one and only Brian Shannon, founder of Alpha Trends. All this and much more on episode number 983 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hey there, it's Andrew Horowitz. How are you? I want to spend some time. In fact, I want to spend this entire episode talking about technical analysis. I want to talk about charting. I want to talk about what it means to look at the lines, the trends, the oscillators, the indicators, and all of that. Again, technical analysis, because there's a lot of things that a lot of investors really get wrong about this. And I think it's really important that we focus in on what it is that you can do, and that dovetails right into our guest today with Brian Shannon. One of the most important things probably is that I would think technical analysis, a lot of people think, is just hocus pocus. They think, oh my God, what can I see with a chart? What can I understand about a chart? And how can I infer what the future is going to hold? First of all, let's get this straight. Technical analysis, charting is not, it's not an absolute. It's an art. Just like all of investing. But the fact is, what you get is some trends. You understand the emotions, the logic, some of the, I guess, what people are thinking. It's the behavior of the markets that really comes through the most. And if you were to kind of mention this into a full room of investors, probably what you're going to get is a wide range of reactions. Some people think that it's just black magic. It's something of a crystal ball. It's maybe even astrology to some people, and some people just really don't understand it, particularly those that really focus in on the ratios, the numbers, right? The fundamentals. In my opinion, both of these extremes, kind of, and all the extremes, miss the point entirely, because the reality is that technical analysis is, it's simply a study of the markets and the behavior of what people, and you can see that visually. And some people are visual learners. Some people are more so written, auditory. But if you are a visual person and you can understand what's happening from the charts and all that, you know, you're going to be in good shape when it comes to looking at technical analysis, because it brings together the momentum, the trends, the collective wisdom of what people are really thinking, and that is what this is all about. Probably one of the biggest misconceptions, again, is that it's not an absolute about the future, but what it could do is give us some inference about what's going to happen. It gives us a bit of a framework into what is going on with the markets and allows us to make, I guess we could say, better informed decisions. And who doesn't want to, in fact, do that? I think we all are interested in understanding a little bit more about what's going on in the future, potentially. So think about it this way. Every single day, every day, millions of investors are trading. not to mention the bots, the algos, and all of that. But millions of investors are investing every day. And what we could do is take all of that, consolidate the price, the volume, the time, and we could put it on a chart. And that information of when the buy or the sell happens is the totality of all the opinions, the research, the emotions, the hopes, the fears, all of that goes into the buy decision or the sell decision, the expectations of what's going to happen in the future. And that in itself, what that does is provides us with a really good set of outcomes. It provides us with an understanding visually on a chart when things are going up or down or just kind of sideways of what people are thinking. Price is the final vote. We know Brian Shannon's coming on today. He says only price, it's the only thing that pays is price. And everything else is just opinion. All right, we got earnings estimates. We got economic forecasts. We have political information. We have news flow. We have all those things. And while they may or may not matter in the long haul, they show up on the chart. We can understand what actually moves markets by understanding, by looking at just a simple line of price of an index, an ETF, an individual stock. So one of the reasons that people really focus in on technical analysis is because it gives us that information. But what people often get incorrect is the approach to doing so. Many investors assume that technicians spend most of their day staring at charts, just like focused in on the charts, right? And when, I don't know, it's Tuesday at 7:15 in the morning or into the afternoon, maybe 1 o'clock, and they're just focused and staring. That's not how professionals do it. Good technicians, good technical analysis, what they do is they identify trends, not moments in time. They understand the risk. They look at what if scenarios. They say, okay, we have these set of indicators that I really want to use, whether it's moving averages or something else. And if then, I will react this way. They identify these trends to make sure that they're making good decisions on their buy and sell and even hold disciplines. They understand the risk. What if it falls below this certain level, whether it's a support from a weekly, a monthly chart? Those are things that they use as their, follow me here, their disciplines. And when you do that, and when you in fact are looking at that, you could really understand better what is happening. So I guess we could say it's a process of observation rather than an observation of anything more than, it is an observation, it's not a prediction. So let me state that again. When we bring this down and we really look at all the matters that are important, what is happening here, it is a observational process rather than a prediction process. So unfortunately, many investors get lost in the weeds. They start with one indicator, whether it's a MACD or an RSI, or they're looking at Bollinger Bands or moving averages. And all of a sudden, they have this dashboard, this cockpit of a 747, which I think there are some really good indicators, some that we use regularly and in fact religiously that we built using a variety of different measures of volume and price. And those we use and we put it into a very sophisticated system that allows us to understand where the buyers are and where those lines in the sand are. We use a good amount of moving averages and swing trading methodologies inside of our methodology that we built. And it was a pretty complex project that we built, but it stood the test of time. And again, when you're using RSI and MACD, Bollinger Bands, Fibonacci retracements, trend channels, Fibonacci time waves, or you know, all of this, pivot points, there's not enough colors and lines that we could actually stick on a chart for some people. You know who you are, right? And what does that do? It creates confusion. Simplicity, elegance, only the things that matter are really what we should be looking at. There's nothing more wrong with glancing at things like the advanced decline lines. Maybe we talked to Tom McClellan last week about his oscillators and all that. Looking at all those kinds of things, but to be hung up on one or the other, that is just big picture, should be part of the process, but not the only process. These are tools, but some of them become distraction points in what we're doing on a regular basis. And I often tell people, look, the most important indicator on any chart is price itself. Our guest today is going to confirm that. Because the indicators are simply mathematical derivatives of price itself. And maybe they'll add in volume and things like that, because they can help provide us this wonderful perspective overall, but it's not the end all be all. It's the end product about whether price is moving higher or lower, really what we're looking at. Too often investors spend all their time to find the perfect indicator and try to retrofit a lot of times the price on top of that to give them decision-making. And what they really need is just a simple, disciplined investment approach. And that's where discipline plays a big part in technical analysis. Because if you don't have it, you're lost. Investing is not simply this finding this great company that, oh my gosh, that we think this is wonderful because I like their product. If it were, investing would be easy. It's really understanding a few things. And the challenge comes in when we want to manage risk, control our emotions, knowing when things are right, when they're wrong. Technical analysis helps us create the guardrails, right? So we don't hurt ourselves. It helps in creating decision trees and final decisions instead of just chasing enthusiasm and the news. And what this does is it keeps us on track. That's all a discipline really does. It keeps us on track. It makes sure we don't go outside the parameters till we wreck ourselves, right? And it helps determine whether or not the market is confirming a story that we believe is true or not. Because we can have the greatest belief in a story and the price is going way against us. And what many people, I think, probably don't understand about technical analysis is that most professional traders and investors use some form of technical analysis in one way or another. And when you think about the buy-sell disciplines and when people are getting into a stock, oftentimes that is the core of what is being used. Some form of trend analysis, relative strength, support resistance, maybe a specific 50-day, 200-day moving average. Institutions are using them regularly, and we can't ignore that as the investors that are going to be small enough to get the ability and the benefit of riding the coattails of the institutional investors. Now, at our firm, technical analysis is never a standalone strategy, right? We don't wake up in the morning and look at a chart and decide, well, we're going to buy or sell based on that. There's got to be a lot of other things behind it, like good quality company to begin with. That's what we want to make sure. And it is a confirmation point when we're investing. So we start with the fundamentals. That's what we do, right? Some people, a true technical analyst doesn't care about the fundamentals. But we want to understand the business. We want to look at the earnings, the valuations, all of this. And then on top of all of these other things, we use technical analysis to understand where we're going to actually invest in. And this is a puzzle. Think of the investment process as a big puzzle. No single piece is going to give us the end product on all this. And when we look at the technical analysis, it helps us separate the emotion from the process. Because a lot of investors become way too emotional overall. They want to win. They want to be right. You want to be right. I want to be right. I'm going to be right. This stock is stupid. It's going to go up eventually. I'm going to keep on putting my money into it. When in fact, if you used a set of tools like a technical analysis package of charts that meet certain criteria, not too complicated, not too busy, those things are going to help you understand what is actually happening. Sometimes that answer could be really uncomfortable and not what we want to hear. But if we believe in the process and the discipline, it's going to make sure that we are going to get to where we want to be without a lot of pain, I think. The objective in all this is not perfection, by far. It is just being right more than being wrong. It's not to call every top and the bottom. It's basically to improve the probabilities of the investment process. So that is what you want to look for. And we do. We use that a lot. And we're going to get to that right now with our guest. And let's talk about interactive brokers. Because, you know, we all know that you research your investments and you analyze markets. But have you researched your broker for the past 3 years? For the past 3 years, Interactive Brokers' individual clients averaged a 24.3% annual return, beating the S&P 500. Lower costs, competitive rates, and access to over 170 global markets help investors keep more of what they earn. The broker you choose matters. Interactive Brokers, member SIPC. Learn more at ibkr.com/performance. Visit ibkr.com/performance. Now let's talk about our guest that's coming on, Brian Shannon. He's been coming on this show since like 2008, and he's a full-time trader, educator, and author of the highly regarded book, Technical Analysis Using Multiple Timeframes. He's the founder of Alpha Trends with over 30 years of experience. He has tutored and turned beginners, losing traders, and even so-called experts into profitable traders that are equipped to seal gains in the market regardless of its turbulence. So you can learn how to do this. Go out, check out his latest books, find out why he has 75,000 followers and hundreds of thousands on Twitter and stock tweets and all that all over YouTube. Great guy. Let's bring him right on right now. And Brian Shannon, how are you? It's been a while.
It has been, Andrew. I'm doing really well. You're looking great too.
Thanks. As are you, sir. We do it's like the Mutual Admiration Society, right? Like
right.
My wife gets together with somebody. She's like, oh my God, your hair looks fabulous. So us guys in the investing world got to be like, hey, you're looking good. Your wallet's looking good, Brian.
Well, I was looking at your health. You look very healthy.
Thank you. So I have a lot of things to talk about, a lot of things to unpack. I want to go over some of the things that you're really well known for. But one of the things I read, I'm sure you put this out somewhere, but before there was Alpha Trends, before there was Lehman Brothers, before there was Anchored VWAP, clearly before that, you were a teenager working as a busboy and landed a major score with you were a caddy at the time too. But somehow, maybe you got the tip from somewhere on the course, by the way. I don't know. You'll tell me. But you made a major fortune on LoJack at the time.
It was, for me, a major. It was a huge win. LoJack was actually, so prior to LoJack, I had been, just hanging out with my dad on a Friday night, and he liked to watch Wall Street Week. So I would hang out with him and, pick up some things without realizing it. And then I had seen something on the evening news in Boston at the time, which was considered the car theft capital of the world. And they were talking about LoJack system, how it was going to, the auto thefts got a lot of press back then. So right. The state police said, we're going to install the receivers in our vehicles. Mm-hmm. And then it said, and then they interviewed a state cop. He goes, yeah, I'm buying stock in this thing. And I said, hey dad, that seems like a good idea. So we looked at it. It was $5 a share. I think I had $500. It was $500 saved up from, like you said, from caddying, from being a busboy.
That's great.
And I said, he goes, how much do you want to buy? I said, I want to buy $500.
I'm all in. Push.
I don't know any difference. And he said, tell you what, we'll buy 1,000 shares. It was $5 a share.
Right.
It was five zero zero.
Right.
So I controlled 1,000 shares with my $500.
Levered up. Major leverage, probably with very little interest.
Yeah. Well, no interest. Right. And we never discussed what would happen if it went down.
Oh.
That was never, and the funny thing is, it never did go down. So it was probably the worst experience, but the best experience at the same time. because it made me think, well, this is just so easy because within 3 months, the stock doubled.
Right.
And I said to my dad, I said, can we just sell it? He goes, yeah, sure. So cashed out. I made a $5,000 profit on my $500 investment and thought, why do people work? Why am I slinging golf bags around the course? Why am I pouring water for these people who are mean to me at the restaurant?
And by the way, I bet your dad didn't even make you pay the taxes on it.
I don't ever remember seeing a tax bill. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Tax-free, levered up, no interest, instant money. I love it. No wonder why you got into this career.
Right.
That's great stuff. So everybody knows you for VWAP, and I guess more importantly than VWAP, because VWAP has been around for many years, right? It's been around forever. Right. And the idea
1988.
And VWAP, but VWAP was really all about where traders would always try to pick up the shares if they were doing self-algorithmic trades. We didn't have algorithmic trades back then, right? But you'd want to buy towards the VWAP so you wouldn't get outside of where the market was during the day if you're loading up on a position for a portfolio. But then it became more popularized for an indicator. Even more, you popularized it with something that was even more important of not just VWAP, which is kind of like what's the daily VWAP, what's the weekly,
right,
but from a anchor point. Tell me about that.
So the VWAP itself was, it was a concept in 1988 that was used for, as you said, is an institutional benchmark for how well has this order been filled on my behalf. So if I'm, Merrill Lynch trying to buy, or, say I'm Fidelity trying to buy 500,000 shares of Intel back in the day, then I would, at the end of the day, my broker would tell me at Merrill Lynch, let's say, he would say, the price was traded between 39 and 40, and we filled it at 39.50. Well, right. It's right in the middle. Seems like a good deal. Sure. But the volume weighted average price tells us, accounted for every single share, what's the average price it traded at? So the average price might have been $39.24. And if I'm paying $39.50, I'm paying 26 cents higher than the average. Uh-huh. Or if it's 75, mm-hmm, then my broker beat the VWAP by 25 cents and I saved 25 cents on 500,000 shares. So it gave the institutional customer a way of saying, did I get a fair order? And because of that, they were able to shop around different brokers and really, stop getting ripped off for a lot of them, basically. So then institutions started creating algorithms around it. It would start as a daily VWAP. So the daily VWAP, they would take time slices of the day. So from 9:30 to 4, they might break that down into 5-minute increments. So they look at it and say, in the first 5 minutes of the day, the stock typically trades 4% of its average daily volume. So they would say, okay, our program is going to buy 4% of that 500,000 shares in the first 5 minutes of the day. And then they would time slice it out because what they're trying to do is get as close to the average price as possible to not reveal their hand as well. They're not just going to go in and spray the offer and, buy 500,000 shares market.
Little mystery behind what they're doing.
And they would, they don't want to move the market and they want to get what's known as, just the average price. What a naive trader could expect to get is basically the way it would, the common layman's term of what it is, the VWAP. So that became a way of looking at it intraday. And when I first started out finding about VWAP, it was simply for intraday. Then I figured out a way where I could look at it for 2 days, 4 days, and 5 days, not by anchoring, but by looking at it from the start 3 days ago, just by changing my chart. It was kind of like a weird little hack. And I would look at it and go, this is just the strangest thing ever. I would look at a stock that, reported earnings on that first day, and it would find buyers at the VWAP. Then I'd look at it and go, the next day I'd look at it, but the VWAP was for day two. But I changed the settings so I could see it from the 2 days and it pulled back.
Right.
And 5 days later, it pulled back to that again and then bounced. Like, what is this magic line? So it really got me curious, obviously. And, I thought I cracked the code to the market.
Magic.
In a way, it is cracking the code to the market for the time frame you're looking at it, because it tells you with 100% certainty from the start of today or from the start of the day 3 days ago or from the Federal Reserve meeting or earnings, you know, 6 weeks ago, from that point, we can measure who has control with 100% certainty. If it's above that line, the buyers are in control. You simply cannot argue it. If it's below that line, it's, you know, the sellers are in control. So, you know, SpaceX just came public.
Yep.
And they, you know, after day four, they dropped below the volume weighted average price from the IPO. And that was at $182 a share. And now it's $131. And it's been below that. In fact, it rallied up to it and found supply there. That became the resistance. So we know for a fact that the average price that paid for this stock since it came public is $168.70. And it's at $131 right now.
So wait, I have a question though. That's easy. When I say that's easy, the starting point is easy on that one.
Sure.
Because I think the magic behind all this, and I think you'd probably agree with this, is what do you use as a starting point?
Right.
And
yes.
And how you don't want to retrofit. I've seen this before using moving averages. Some people retrofit, right? Now, I've always questioned you on 65 minutes, which we're going to come back to in a second. When I say questioned you, I asked you about it. I didn't question you about it.
No,
different way of saying it. But you can go back and try to retrofit for a good story, right? And try to make things fit. But how do you find what you think is the appropriate VWAP that's not a starting point that's defined as a SpaceX that the IPO just came out or earnings came out? What do you do?
Right. So the IPO is obviously the easiest one there is. And it's pretty insane how long that anchor will be relevant. Anyways, there's basically three categories that I look at. There is an event. So it might be earnings. It might be a Federal Reserve event. It might be an FDA report. The PPI, if you know, from a short-term perspective, you can look at it. So an event. Then from highs and lows. So, you know, the high of the move in SpaceX was at $228, whatever dollars it is per share.
Yeah.
And now the anchor from that high point is actually right at the anchor from the beginning of the IPO. So there's event, there is highs and lows. So I'll look
at swing highs and lows too. Not just highs and lows for a year. It could be within a range that is continuous that you find a swing low that bottoms out, let's say.
Correct. Yeah. So, and then time, so an event that's been really relevant to this market right here is the anchor from the ceasefire that occurred on
which
April 8th.
Which ceasefire?
Ceasefire. I know the original, I always refer to it as the so-called ceasefire.
Yeah, the so-called.
But the one that really got the market kicking on April 8th.
Yeah.
So if you look at that, like Micron is on that right here, right now at $851. The S&P 500 is well above it, but there, you know, that's been one. So there are, let me slow down. So there are price, there are, you know, highs and lows, for instance, there are events, and then there are time-based. So time-based would be year to date, month to date, week to date, the daily VWAP or the 2 day VWAP. You know, I use the 2 day volume weighted average price for a lot of entry techniques, for swing trades as well. But those are the three categories. So event.
That's what I think is what someone needs to hone, because you've made it so easy to understand the anchored VWAP. I just want to be clear that I'm talking about an anchored VWAP, a little different than the VWAP, because VWAP on a chart, when you put it in your system from a charting system, is just a little bit, it's still the same basic calculation, but it may cover a different range. The anchoring point, that word is your descriptive of where to start from, right? Am I saying that? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and there's a discretionary function to that, which is the art of technical analysis, not the science of it. So you have to say, well, what is important to the market? Well, clearly the market has looked at the first ceasefire. And that's where the market gapped up and really made this big run. Now we're correcting and it's coming down towards that level. So we look at that and say, now I don't look at it and say there's support, right? That's what people who get themselves in trouble with technical analysis do. I look at it and say, here's a level of potential support. It's a level of interest where there has been previously been buyers. So let's see if they're there again. That is my cue to look to a shorter term time frame and say, okay, now do I see any evidence that the buyers are actually gaining control, or is it just free falling in through this level, which it's doing right now as we speak?
Well, and the thing is that that brings us to a point that I think we need to state, I think, and not make light of this at all, because it is your catchphrase. It is like your bumper sticker. This is Brian Shannon's bumper sticker, actually. It's only price pays. And I think if you did have a bumper sticker, it would be that sticker, wouldn't it?
I should, actually. I really should
I'll
print
buy one
out.
Let's get that. Let's do that. Let's do shirts with smiley faces and stuff. But the point of that is, and I think so simplistic yet elegant, is ties back into what you just said. It's suggested support. So if in fact it falls below, I know the answer. You can fill in the blank. If it falls below, and if price, it's only price that pays, and you are long, then
get out.
Get out or reevaluate, right?
Yeah. So it's the place, like I call it a level of interest. A lot of people, and I think I've helped people train people on this. You know, people would say, hey, it's coming to support at the 20-day moving average or the 50-day moving average. And I'd say, it's coming into a level of interest. Let's see if there's actual support there. Let's let the market tell us. Don't just blindly stick your bids in at some level because it's a squiggly line on a chart. That's insane. Yeah. Let's look at it and see what technical analysis really is. It's not about buying at the squiggly line. It's about evaluating supply and demand and saying who has control. Is there any evidence on that shorter term time frame that the sellers are slowing down? Is there any evidence that the shorts are starting to cover? Is there sideline cash coming in and providing at least stability at this level? Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about, you know, a stock like Micron coming in and bouncing $2 off of VWAP. And people say, there, it bounced from it. No, it probed it. Let's give it a few hours in here. Let's see if it actually does. You're not looking at every little reactionary move. You've got to wait for market structure to say, okay, now it looks safe. And we have a place, hopefully, where there's a higher low that's been established on the shorter term timeframe that we can buy some strength and then set our stop below that low. So at least we have defined risk. Whereas if we're just buying on the dip, where do we put our stop? If it doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned the art of technical analysis, but there's something that the three formats of investment styles have all in common. You have quantitative, which is, you know, filtering, scoring, finding out data, investing using some factoring process. There's fundamental analysis. I call it looking under the hood, right? Understanding what's going on with the actual meat and potatoes of the company, right? Understanding that and saying, well, is this a company I want to buy? Then there's technical. Technical has a set of rules. All of these are set on one word, which not because this is the Discipline Investor Podcast, but discipline. Because you start getting around that and you start getting into that squishy mode of, well, I feel like it should bounce from here. Or, you know, I own that stock and I said I was going to sell it when it got below the VWAP, but you know what? I'm going to add some to it now and hold it because I really like the stock and I think it's overdone and everybody's wrong. That doesn't fit into your equation, does it, Brian?
It doesn't. And if it does, hopefully I recognize it really quickly because I still make the mistakes.
Yeah, we
still do them. And I look at it and say, well, at least I recognize the mistake quickly and I can move on rather than compound it.
Yeah.
You know, people, I would used to use the example of, you know, a stock would pull back to the 10-day moving average and you would maybe buy some there. And then it drops below that low and you don't sell and you look at the 20-day moving average. You say, okay, well, it's going to hold the 20, but it slices through the 20. You're like, okay, well, I'll just give it down to the 50-day moving average. Now you're down 10%, 15%, 20%. And you're like, well, the 200-day moving average is still rising, and I'll actually add more down there. And now you're down 30% in a stock that was supposed to be a swing trade that you were supposed to have a 2.5% stop on, and it just becomes a disaster.
Yep.
So you've got to admit that mistake right away and just get the heck out of the way.
Yeah, just stay with whatever discipline. And one of the ways I found, and this is so simplistic, I've talked about it for years. I really haven't mentioned this in a while, but write things down. It's easier than ever now, right? You could put it into probably some kind of agent or pinned GPT or something. Hey, this is what I'm doing. And even set a reminder for me and make sure I stay on discipline. I am certain you could turn your AI into a trading coach to make sure you stay on target, assuming you obey it, right?
I was just thinking that. I was thinking, well, some people are going to override it, yeah, or, you know, chuck that stupid thing off.
What do they know? That
I'm
stupid
doing my
thing.
Own thing here. Yeah.
So other VWAP is something you talk about, write about, and really have focused on. Are there other indicators that, or tools that you rely on most often?
So for me, it is only price pay. So that's the most important thing.
Sure.
If a stock reports earnings and the stock is going down, like Micron, best earnings, you know, that the stock has ever had, just in crazy, insane printing cash. The stock's down 35-40% from that day. So a lot of people who don't understand the way that markets work look at it and go, this is insane. How could this be? These are, you know, the market doesn't make sense. So I do have my favorite, with a hands down favorite indicator that I use from a swing trader's perspective, Andrew, is the 5-day moving average. And I believe we've discussed this before, and it kind of ties into what you were talking about with the 65-minute time frame, but the 5-day moving average on an intraday time frame only. So I look at that, and if a stock is below a declining 5-day moving average, to me, it's guilty till proven innocent. It needs to heal at a minimum and see that 5-day moving average turn sideways and then start to turn higher before I'll consider buying it. I guarantee I will never buy the lows with that strategy, but what it does is prevents me the heartache of trying to pick the lows and seeing it drop 5%, 10%, 15%, 20%. So I'm waiting at those key levels, and the 5-day moving average is the best trend filter for swing trades.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned that you think you've mentioned that to me before. I think you and I have been chatting since 2008 or so.
Yeah.
Give or take, with, I think, your first wonderful book that you wrote. And I remember, by the way, I'll give you something that I maybe never told you, but I remember when I first met you, and you and I were both younger, we were starting out in this world of, what would we call it? We called blogging back then, maybe, I guess. We were in this kind of world.
Yeah.
And I think we both knew Howard,
yep,
of course.
Howard Lindzen.
He was on the show actually very recently, talking about the degenerate economy and all that, right, and all the good things that go along with it. He's an animated fellow. And, you know, I remember very distinctly when you wrote your first book, and I was so happy for you, seriously, because I'm like, you know, this dude, he's kind of was a writer, and I don't think you were like a professional investor at the time, and you came up with some great ideas, great functions, and really built that out through the social media world. Stock Twitch was one of the ones that was a big catalyst for you, I know. And so it was really great. I was really impressed by that in the beginning.
Well, I don't know if people know this, but if they pick up that book and look at the back cover, you have an endorsement
on
the back page.
I do.
Yeah. And I was very honored by that.
Yeah, good stuff. So fast forward to where we are today, a little bit older, much better looking, both of us. Let's be honest. I mean, let's not throw it out there. That's the facts. The facts are the facts.
These are facts.
So have you become a little bit more refined and minimalistic with your charts over the years, or do you find yourself adding any more data? Because a lot of people have those charts. You've probably seen them with like 14,000 lines going around. They got the Fibonacci's. They got the various Fibonacci's, right? You got the time-based ones. You got the price-based ones. You got the retracements, the forward looks. You know, get that. Then you got your moving averages. You got like 8 of them on there, all sorts of colors. And then you put like trend lines. You got the trend lines going on and all that. You got the market profile from right to left. I don't even understand how that all works on a chart. But what have you done over the years? Have you become or changed anything?
I have definitely simplified it, but I've actually had it pretty simple for the last 5 or 6 years. And that is, I look at price, a few simple moving averages, and volume doesn't play as big a role as people might think. I largely ignore volume, truthfully, but to me, it's more about the volume weighted average price, because it tells us specifically something useful about volume rather than, hey, that was big volume, that was low volume. Hey, we're down on low volume, so it doesn't count somehow, some people think. If your account's down, your account's down. Doesn't matter whether it's on big volume or low volume.
I had a terrible day, but it was on low volume. I'm good.
Right. I mean, it's true. Some people will feel that way.
Yeah.
They will bullshit themselves.
Well, they'll be also like, everybody was down, so what's the big deal?
Right.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Let's go with that.
Okay.
How long can that go on? But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you talk about volume, and sticking that with the weighted average price, right? So it's volume, weighted average price. It reminds me of people that talk about like things like price earnings ratios in a total vacuum. Well, this is a price earnings ratio of 22. The market's multiple is 25. Yeah, but what does that have to do with anything? The fact is you want to use PEG ratio. I'm good with that because now you're doing a comparative. Very similar to a volume weighted average price using price earnings to growth ratios. Okay, that gives me a little bit more of an understanding of what's happening from a fundamental standpoint. Or if you want to say, you know, this is a 24 in a healthcare industry that everybody else is trading on average at 16. Well, that's different because the healthcare probably shouldn't be compared to that. So that I think that's the way I like to look at it, is to understand how volume is on a relational basis to something that matters. So that's how I look at it.
I agree. And what matters is how does the average person feel that's holding this stock? The average person that's holding this stock since that big catalyst of the April 8th original ceasefire, they're still feeling good about the market. But the NASDAQ has come down to that two times in the last month and a half, and the tests are becoming more frequent. And we're seeing lower highs in the NASDAQ. That tells me that the buyers are really kind of, you know, we're more the seesaw is kind of in the middle here. And if it goes the other way, there's going to be a lot of people who are on average losing money from that catalyst. And it's probably going to drop down to the year-to-date anchor, which is about 10% lower. Or about 7%. But either way, they kind of give us guidelines to how the sentiment is, not the sentiment of what people say. Oh, I'm bullish. Okay, what does that mean? That means nothing. I'm bullish because I own it at 705, but if it breaks below 705, I have my stop and I'm no longer bullish. That tells me something about the crowd. If the crowd behavior is on average long the NASDAQ from that catalyst at 701, breaking below that 701 doesn't mean it's going to fall apart, but it means we're at a critical level here, and we've really got to start paying attention to price more carefully here. Earnings season is here. Now we're going to be it's more about the individual stocks, and that's where the risk is, but that's where the opportunity is.
Sure.
But is the market going to be favorable during this period?
Right, because we have those times. The big words of the last number of months have been shrugs off. You know?
Right.
The stock shrugged off this. It's shrugged off that. The market's shrugging off inflation, ceasefires, back on war, oil prices up. I mean, the whole shrug off thing, right? That's been—
The wall of worry.
The wall of worry. But this has been more of a shrug off. This has been a big,
I mean,
I see every time it's like market shrug off. It's like now I'm like, well, what happens when they don't shrug so much? I wonder about that. But you spend a lot of time on the equity side, and we'll call it ETFs and sector based because you do swing trading, et cetera. Where are you? I don't know if we've ever talked about this. Where are you in the options trading world?
I do some options. I use them pretty strategically in that I want, if I like a company, and maybe I'm not sure about their fundamentals, or if their competitor is maybe coming out with something that might change them. To me, I use them opportunistically, directionally. So I buy calls and I buy puts. I don't do any options, you know, fancy.
No iron condors or put spreads, nothing like that?
No, nothing like that. It's simply—
No butterflies, none of that.
It's a risk mitigation tool for me. And a lot of times I'll say it's a just-in-case position. So this setup isn't quite here yet, but there's favorable currents in their sector. And just in case something happens, just in case Trump says, hey, we're going back into the quantum names and or whatever, we're giving them more money. So just in case something happens, I want to have a position on, but I don't want to experience maybe a 10% down gap. Let's say it's a biotech stock.
Right.
So if it does gap down 10%, and if I've got a $100,000 position, well, then I'm out 10 grand.
Right.
But if I could get some exposure using options for $1,500 and get 80% of the upside, but I know in advance that my risk is that $1,500, to me, that's how I use them. So it's it's just in case something big happens here. I want to have a position, but I don't want to be fully exposed, basically.
Yep. Brian Shannon, I'm going to ask you something. I don't know if anybody's ever asked you this before. How do you feel about memorializing something in the world of technical analysis as you've done. Do you ever recognize that about yourself? I mean, why don't we just call it the Shannon? I want it to be called the Shannon indicator. Not the BS indicator. Okay. The Shannon indicator.
And not the AH?
No, that's it. Yes. But seriously, have you ever thought about that? The importance of that? Don't be too humble about this. Seriously. Have you ever thought about that? That you've actually created something like a Chaikin index, you know, that kind of, or Bollinger, you know, they've all, obviously VWAP was there before, but you're in that world. Do you know that?
Well, it's nice to hear. My main goal for me
is to make money
in my account. That's my number one thing.
Of course.
My second goal is to help other people. I've made every mistake in the book. I've used all of the oscillators and indicators, moon cycles, you name it. I've looked at it. I've studied it. And that's why, going back to your question, is how are my charts? They're stripped down. They're simple. It's price, volume, and time. Those are the only, and that's what the VWAP is. Only price pays. Volume tells us the intensity, but it also tells us the psychology when we add it with that time component of since this event. So it tells us that psychology. So, you know, it's nice. It's good to hear that. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm in this business to make money, and all the praise doesn't help me make money. It's nice to hear, but it's good
important
to hear.
This is important. This is like you getting, not from me, but generally you're basically getting on the Wall Street Walk of Fame, a tile.
I'm honored by that. I really am. And I love getting feedback from customers or just people on Twitter saying, "Hey, you've really helped me a lot. You made that concept clear to me. I'm having my best year ever," things like that. Those are really nice to hear. But the good thing is they don't go to my head.
Yeah, that's good.
There's a balance.
That's good.
You can't believe
it. I just want to say that to you. So, but here's a couple other questions I have. The other thing that you've brought out is kind of, I think, hard for a lot of people to understand. And number one, number two, they don't know how to actually activate this on their charting stack. And what are you using right now?
My main one is TC2000.
TC2000. That's been around forever.
Yeah. Right?
Very much either advanced or as simple as you want it to be.
Well, I use it for two reasons. One, it's simple. And two, the number one reason is I was using, what was it called? Realtek. I was using Realtek maybe about 12 years ago. And the people at TC2000, I got to know them. And they said, "Hey, Brian, we want you to use our software." I was like, I'm really comfortable on this one. Yeah. I said, "I'll tell you what, though. If you can do this for me, I will switch and I will stay with you guys." And that was, if you can add a point-and-click anchored VWAP to your charts. And they did it. And if you go on there today and hover over the little icon, it says anchored VWAP by Alpha Trends. So they're the first people who made the anchored VWAP possible on software. That's why it's on TradingView. That's why it's on, you know, whatever interactive broker, whatever broker you use. If they have it, it's because it started with TC2000, and I'll forever be loyal to them for doing that. So talk about, you know, someone who deserves credit is those guys for doing
that. Sure, I made it easy to use. So the other thing, though, is you've talked to me about this before because I asked you about this because I saw you writing about it. I'm like, excuse me, Brian, I don't understand. 65-minute time frame. Let's go through that from start to bottom and why that's important.
Sure. Any, you know, 65-minute, 30-minute, 195-minute, they're all derived from the same math, which is the market is open from 9:30. It's not even 6:30 my time. It's 7:30. What am I talking about?
It's all right.
It's open from 9:30 to 4, which is 6.5 hours. 6.5 hours is, if you look at an hourly chart, you have 7 bars throughout the day. If you're looking at hours, you look at 9:30 to 10, that's one bar. And then each hour after that is another bar. So you've got 7 bars that get equal weighting in a moving average or any indicator. But one of them is only 30 minutes long. So you want to normalize that. So there were 390 minutes in a day. We want it divisible by a even number. Mm-hmm. So 65 times 6 is 390. 130 times three is 390. So if we're looking at a 130-minute bar, what we're looking at is three bars per day. 195 is two bars per day. It's a half-day chart, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's
well,
just
but also if
math.
You do volume-weighted average and you're using a day, you're using, let's say, if you're doing hourly, well, all of a sudden you're clipped on both sides, right? A little bit?
Yeah. More on a simple moving average because you're giving equal weight to a 30-minute period as six 60-minute periods. And so
like a simple versus a – so simple moving average, just for a second, simple moving average is as it sounds. It's just basically the average price that it travels on an average basis throughout that time period, right? It's just moving around. There's – several different types of other, well, you go through this. Go through the moving averages that are out there. You're the expert.
Sure. Well, a simple moving average is just that. You know, if the average 5 periods ago was 10 and it's 15 now, you drop that 10 off, the 15 drags it higher. By in each week, let's say we're talking about a 5-day moving average, mm-hmm. 5-period moving average. Each portion of that gets 20% weighting, right?
Right.
Five periods.
Yep.
Now, if you're looking at, a longer period, it becomes a little less easy to do in your head, but you can still do it. The exponential moving average, the theory about an exponential average is it gives
weight. More weight?
Yes, more weight. Thank you.
You're welcome.
More weight to the most recent data.
Uh-huh.
So it's telling you that, you know, what happened, in period five is more important than period one. So the period one in a 5-day moving average might get 15% of that weighting, whereas the most recent one gets 25% of the weighting. And I'm just making those numbers up, but it weighs it much more heavily and says the older data.
Don't you think though, it seems to make more sense to do that. Like it's more important than what's happening now than it was 5 days ago. So let's kind of pay more of attention to it. But most people still use simple.
Yeah, I I can figure it out in my head.
Right.
I can look at the chart and it's not a complicated math formula.
Yeah.
If you look at the formula for an EMA, I don't know really what makes it move. When this price drops off, I'm not sure what effect that has on the direction and the slope of that moving average. And to me, that's an important part of my analysis. It's not just, so in particular with that 5-day moving average, I look at it and say, well, the 5-day moving average is declining and 5 days ago, the stock was at 120. 4 days ago, it dropped to 110. And then we had 110 for 4 days in a row. So I know that 5-day moving average is going to be declining as long as we have that $120 data from 5 days ago.
Uh-huh.
But as that data drops off and now day five is 110, now I know that 5-day moving average is going to flatten out. And if we make a higher high above that, now we're making a higher high above the flat to rising five, and it will probably be rising. And that to me is more a stronger momentum indicator. And I can anticipate when that direction starts to change versus is this just a blip and the trend is still lower?
So if you could force every trader to follow one rule for a year, what would your best advice be to them?
It would be learn how to cut your losers at a predetermined level. And as part of that, you know, tune out the news.
And tune out the emotion.
Yeah. And the news is a large driver of the emotion. The news always is there to, you know, be sensationalized and make you feel like you're missing out. Michael Saylor sold his Bitcoin. Oh, shoot. Maybe I should sell mine too. No, it's already been priced in. Bitcoin went up 15% from that news in a matter of a week. Micron has its best numbers ever. You know, oh, I'm missing out. This is the greatest growth story ever. I've got to buy a 1200.
Or SpaceX, for that matter. SpaceX was the ultimate. Come on, SpaceX was the ultimate screw with your story. Because at the time when that was all building, I cannot tell you how many people that have never called me about something called me, wrote me, texted me. Right. Like, are you kidding me? I said, we're not getting anywhere near this thing. Right.
And then 3 days later, they thought you were a fool because it was up so much.
Now they're looking again. it's kind of crazy on this whole thing. And you know, that's an important thing because the news, and the items. And I'll share with you, and I've said this before because I've been on the show many times. I've literally stopped watching or listening to CNBC whenever I can. Like when I say whenever I can. Sometimes it's for entertainment. Most of the time I'm looking at Bloomberg or other news sources for the actual facts, not the sensationalized stuff by Kernan and Sorkin and Becky and all that in the morning, or Jim Cramer that comes on every day and loves every stock every day and then all of a sudden hates it when it goes down, right? You know, it's like that. I want to close with this question to you, and I want you to think about this because this is happening. Whether we like it or not, it's happening. Other things like this have happened before, neuro-style trading, smart thinking, AI-ish kind of stuff. But AI seriously is here, right? Mm-hmm. How do you think, have you seen, or how do you think, project, that this is going to arrive in and be a part of a trader's toolbox over the next maybe 5 years or so?
Well, I'll tell you how I use it first, and because I, you know, wasn't using it 2 years ago. When I look at a stock and I don't really know anything about it, I do a real simple look, and I will say ELI 15. Explain like I'm 15 years old. What this company does, it's bullish and bearish arguments, and are there any catalysts coming in the next 2 weeks? That's it.
Okay.
And then because I'm looking at a chart setup. But I don't want to go in blind. It's, you know, some biotech that has a phase 3 catalyst coming in 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I say, let me know within the next 2 weeks, because that's about what a swing trade might be. So I want to use it for what I need to know. I don't want to know their debt to equity ratio. I don't want, you know, a 20-page report. Someone shared with me. They said, hey, I built this super cool prompt. Look at it. I'm like, this is a 20-page printout. I am not going to read this about every stock I look at. Now, if I'm an investor and I'm looking to lock money into it for a couple of years, I'll skim it. But even then, you know, price is what matters to me.
Right.
If it's got a good chart, great. Or a good story, great. That's how I'm using it right now. That will probably evolve. But a lot of it seems like hype to me so far. I've seen people talking about AI bot challenges, and none of them really seem to be making much money, is the consensus. I think it's going to make a lot of people join the algorithmic trading, you know, the quants, like you said, that it'll be a lot easier for individuals to do that. And if that's their, you know, area of interest, they should continue to go for it. I still believe, and maybe, you know, maybe I'll be proven a dinosaur. The HI, at least the HI up in this human, is more like, I would never, ever go into tech and ask, you know, Perplexity or whoever, tell me about the technical analysis about this chart and look at it seriously and think that, but people are doing that. But
they're doing it because they don't know. And the problem is, it's like anything else. When you come to these kinds of things, I see them as an additional quiver, if you will, you know, arrow when you and tool and a assistance device. You know, there's two different AIs, by the way. It's artificial intelligence, it's Andrew intelligence too, by the way.
Nice.
So, but seriously, it's a tool to enhance that can maybe do things a lot. It's been programmed until we get into the agentic side of it and the total inference where it could really make decisions and understand. The fact is, it's still being taught on what it is. And predictive patterns is definitely something that we can't disagree with this, you and I, right? Mm-hmm. Predictive patterns can be something it could possibly pull from there. But then again, once everybody has that predictive pattern known, then it goes to shit.
Right.
But a tool, I agree with you. I do question also, and maybe a speed factor in maybe making decisions faster than we can type and put things in or on our phone, buying things or whatever. But I would tend to agree with you that it's a little silly to think that at this point that it can be done. It's anything more than just a tool.
It'll always be a tool because people are, you know, edges are going to come and go using this new tool, just like moving averages, just like breakouts. They're tools there to assist us. They put guardrails on our trades. They give us logic for if thens. If the price breaks above here, I'm going to buy it. But if it breaks below there, I'm going to set my stop and move on because the market doesn't agree with me. And the tools will get more complicated. And a lot of people get bogged down in that complexity mm-hmm. to the point where they, like you said, with the people with 16 indicators on their chart, that is the 20-page report to me about the fundamentals of the company versus the four paragraphs that I can read real quick and say, okay, it looks safe to buy this. There's nothing major known. I can trust that. That will likely submarine this so I can get involved.
Yep.
But if I see something in there that says, you know, be aware that their competitor is, you know, reporting this, then I might go to my just in case options.
Yep.
Like we were talking about.
The other thing about the 20-page report, what that really is good for is to hold you into the position, assuming nothing has changed throughout various cycles of price volatility. So yeah. when you get nervous about the stock, you could just reach for that and say, oh yeah. I remember page 4 talking about it's going to be a 3-year time frame until they build out this X or Y, or, you know, the catalyst they have, we know is going to be great. It looks like it's there because of some reason. And this is going to be a drug that's going to go through and has 4 years. So in the third year, second year, you're not worried about it. You can just grab that and use that as a way to hold you in and keep you in. And that's what the analysts do.
Right.
So.
But these are the same guys that, you know, the biggest shame of the SpaceX was what? You know, last week we saw the price target. Some guy, I think he had a $2,000 or $4,000 price target. Give me a,
Crazy. We've seen that before. Kathy Wood, one of the greatest tax losses that you can create in life was to give Kathy Wood your money. That's what they say, right? The fact is she was hot. She was on every show. She made these great price predictions. And some of the players out there, whether it's Jeremy Siegel or Dan Ives, right? All these guys that come up with these crazy numbers are always on the shows because they are dramatic. They provide an incredible amount of information that may or may not be right, by the way, but they have all this information that just flows. And it's entertainment. That's what it is.
Kathy Wood, Tom Lee, Michael Saylor. Those three are like the posters of what to avoid. It's going, you know, Ethereum's going to 5,000 by the end of this year. Oh no, 3,000. Oh, there was a computer program, a glitch that screwed it up. So now it's only going to 2,500.
Yep.
And then, but don't worry, in 5 years, it's going to go to 100,000. So don't worry about that. So that's what the 20-page research report might tell you is, well, Tom Lee says it's going to 100,000 in 5 years. Keep your eyes on the prize. Meanwhile, it doesn't mean you have to write it down 60%.
Yeah, well, it's a winter, right? The crypto winter. You got to admit something about the Bitcoin community. They've come up with some fascinating ways to keep you invested and keep you interested.
It's kind of, you know, that just the winter reminds me also of tax loss harvesting. You harvest a good crop. It should be tax loss weeding. You're weeding out the garbage.
Right.
But when they say this is, it's sold as we're doing something, you know, wonderful for our portfolio by harvesting these losses. You don't harvest the dead crops in the field. You let them.
You definitely weed,
you take them out.
We do that a bit. That's what the name of the thing is. We do that for our clients. But the truth of the matter is, that has become less and less, fortunately for us, because there's not much losses to be found. Seriously,
yeah.
I'm not to say
I
brag. I'm sure everybody has the same problem.
Yep.
Yeah. So Brian Chan, any last words, any last thoughts?
Disciplined approach is what it's all about, Andrew.
Where do they find you?
At Alpha Trends on X is the easiest way.
And he sends out, by the way, a regular, I think daily, newsletter with the video that he does. He kind of goes through it in very fast and very fashionable sense, how it's supposed to be looked at, the chart, what it is that we're looking at, where the if then, you know, trust it until this point, it's following here. If it goes below this point, get out. This is where our buy target may be on this, et cetera, for markets and and various other things. So great job on that. Keep up the great work, Brian Shannon. Love you, man.
You too, Andrew.
Thanks.
Great seeing you again.
Thanks. That's going to wrap up this episode all about technical analysis, charting, and how to do it, what not to use it for, and what to use it for. A lot of times you'll hear the talking heads talking about this whole idea of, wow, the RSI and the PE ratio is below market multiples. And that's great. That's wonderful. But in fact, sometimes not usable. They do it for the excitement, the drama, the talking points, to make themselves look smart, I think. That's what it's really all about. Think about it for a second. That's what they're doing. Use it for decision-making. Use it for opportunities. use it for, staying on discipline, and use the right tools that make sense. The things that can tell you actually what's going on, the footprints in the sand of what traders are doing, that's what you want to use. Really smart stuff. Thanks so much for joining me this week. I will see you again with another great guest lined up for next week. I think it's Christopher Whalen. We haven't had him on for a really long time, so it's going to be pretty cool. Again, make sure you subscribe over on Amazon, Apple, Spotify, YouTube. We are also going to start doing more video work. We have a whole new setup going on. So you'll be able to see this in live video. Well, not live, maybe live, but at least recorded video very shortly. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you soon. This podcast is intended for informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized investment advice. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal, and past performance is not indicative of future results. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and any guests and may not necessarily reflect those of Horowitz & Company, Inc., an investment advisor registered with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of training or skill. Advisory services are only offered to a client or prospective clients where Horowitz & Company is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Any mention of third-party companies, products, or services is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute an endorsement. Hypothetical scenarios or forward-looking statements are for illustrative purposes and should not be viewed as guarantees. Content is intended for U.S. residents only and may not be applicable in other jurisdictions. Listeners should consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Please visit our website for additional information, disclosures, as well as a copy of our Form CRS. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.